Our first prayer should be that Navashin's coming up here and adjusting the heat will work. It's so cold in this temple. I think the cold outside is beyond the ability of these heaters, is what I think right now. It's hard to believe right now. I was a little surprised when I came in and saw our beautiful altar this morning. What a huge energy was in this temple for the past many weeks, but particularly this past week, as our school, Living Wisdom School, put on its performance on the life of Abraham Lincoln. I saw it Wednesday. Interestingly, from the minute the first piece of music started, I thought about this a lot last night. I could have it wrong. If it wasn't America the Beautiful, it was something. Is that Tanya shaking? I said yes. Immediately I started crying. Nothing happened but the music. And I immediately started crying. Not crying with upset about what's happening in America, but crying from that place of joyful hope and anticipation. All of what that song holds, that extraordinarily patriotic place that's in us, that's about possibility, maybe not about reality in the moment. But it was very touching. It was extremely, extremely well done by the director, by the writer, by the children. Everybody just deserves so much, and many more people. But I just couldn't put it down. I really wanted to come and see it again last night, but I couldn't make it. So I started just looking for words about Abraham Lincoln on the internet, just reading about him. You know, I really felt like I wanted to reread the Gettysburg Address, and he was just such a great man, and I just felt like I wasn't ready to put him down. And I didn't bring any of these with me, so I can't read them to you. But one person who wrote about him after another, talked so beautifully about his intuitive nature, that his greatness lied in his intuition, which is not what I expected. I wasn't thinking of him in terms of the talk, though clearly he was a great man. You know, he was, formally speaking, an uneducated man. One of the authors said, and I don't know if this is true, but he said, if you added up all of the hours of formal education that he had, it would be less than equivalent to 1 year in school. It's remarkable. The man went on to be, you know, to guide us in some of the most meaningful moments in this country, and to become known as one of the greatest beings of all of our time. And everybody spoke about, in their words, the quickness and the accuracy and the magnificence of his intuition. It's just interesting, when I was reading it, I was also reminded, I didn't go back and look this up, but I think the book is called Conversations with Great Composers. If that's not the exact title, it's close. And I love that book. It reminded me to reread it. But in the opening chapters, when this author of the book is interviewing somebody who had a lot of notes from when Brahms lived, the author himself had spent time with Brahms, that's what it was. But Brahms said, you cannot publish any of this until 50 years after I die. So now the author's writing it. But in there, he was quoting some of those conversations and some of Brahms' references to Beethoven. And, you know, people used to complain about how hard it was to play Beethoven. I'm not a pianist or a violinist, so I don't know, but people would go up to him and say, you shouldn't have written it this way, my fingers don't want to do that. And Beethoven would just scream at them, when I heard that music, I was hearing it from God Almighty. Do you think I care about what your fingers can do? You know, these very great, great souls who live in terms of what this reading is talking about. It's very touching. And we can all really take a lesson from them, as well as certainly from these masters and Jesus and Krishna. Swami Kriyananda, who at least most of you know, but I see a few new faces, who founded all of Ananda, everything that we know as Ananda, and who, just without recounting all of his accomplishments, was just an incredibly great soul. And I think I even said here a few weeks ago that he frequently told us the story, frequently, about how he got to meet Paramahansa Yogananda. He read Autobiography of a Yogi. In a couple of days, he got on a bus, he went cross-country, and he said to Yogananda, "I want to be your disciple." And he himself says it just surprised him that he would say that, because he was rather intellectual at that time. He was 22 years old, but a very smart young man, very much in his head in many ways. And I recently read the transcript of a talk he gave many, many years ago, because I've heard that story so many times. But in that, the transcript of this talk that I just read, he said, "My heart recognized the truth, though my mind had no idea about it yet." And it just, again, speaking to this, my heart recognized the truth. So his heart just burst open with this, "I want to be your disciple." And his mind was saying to him, what are you saying? He went on to say that when he wrote, I think the book was The Essence of Self-Realization, but I'm pretty sure that's the book he referred to in what I'm about to quote to you. He said, "I so consciously prayed for guidance when I went to write that book, and it came." He said, "I prayed and I put myself in a position to receive the intuition, and it came." And he wrote this book. He remembered so many conversations verbatim that he had had with Yogananda. I don't know what year he wrote that book, but I think it was in the 90s. And Yogananda had died in 1952. But he said, "I told myself right then that everything I did from then on, I would do in that way, stopping, praying, asking for intuition that only a master could give me." He said, "I never wrote again, I never wrote a note of music, another book, anything, without praying and putting myself in a position to receive intuition." There's that wonderful story, again, many of us know it, that, you know, Swamiji went to the desert with Yogananda when Yogananda was writing his interpretation of the Bhagavad Gita. He was there with him throughout that time. But when it came time for Swami to write his interpretation, which he wanted to do for many years, he was disturbed by the fact that by then he no longer had access to the notes and the writings, the original writings of Paramahansa Yogananda. And for years it bothered him, because he knew that he was meant to write the interpretation of the Bhagavad Gita. And when he prayed about that, he was told, he heard, "Don't discount the possibility of a skylight. Those were the words that came to him. What beautiful words. He said, I don't even know if I understood them right in the moment. But he then went on, as we all know, or many of us know, to write the Bhagavad Gita beginning to end in 3 months. Very little edit. It came to him. It was an inspired work. When I hear those words, don't discount the possibility of a skylight, I am reminded of what we say every week when we have our purification that says, open your heart to me and I will enter and take charge of your life. Now, I think those words actually scare a lot of people, but it's not controlling your life in the way we Westerners think of control. It's if you open your heart, if you do what Swamiji was talking about, if you put yourself in a position to receive my guidance, I will lead you to that place of intuitive perception, which is the only way that Swamiji could have written his book in 3 months. We're all being given the opportunity to do that, just as Swamiji did. Some weeks ago, or a week ago, that's shocking, we had a celebration here of Master's Mahasamadhi. And the song was sung, that Dr. Lewis wrote. Master's Love for Me, thank you. And it was sung beautifully. I'm not sure if I said this here. I couldn't have because I don't think I've been here since then. But there's a line in there that says, in all pervading silence, so silently and sweetly, let me just get these lines right. Sorry. The line that I want is, in all pervading silence, he whispers, I am here. And when I heard that song, it reminded me of two different stories that I've shared with many people before, but again, are worth sharing and are just so clearly about intuitive perception and opening to that. The first is that many years ago, there was a man who came into our church. He was not really looking for a spiritual path, but he was just on the grounds, and he walked into the church, and he just put himself in this position, and he stood here for a moment, and he said to me later, I wasn't looking for anything, Shanti. I wasn't looking for anything in the moment, but they whispered to me. And when I heard that song, and that line has just gone over and over in my head so many times, in all-pervading silence, he whispered, I am near. And he didn't really mean that he whispered, because one of the lines in that song also, how sweet the sound of Om, its master's voice I hear. And then that next line, Dr. Lewis wrote that song from a place of pure expanded consciousness. That's how that came to him. When he had attuned himself to the divine, he could hear the whisper in his heart. The way that God will speak to us, if we are quiet enough, if we get still enough to hear it. And that's what that man was saying to me. They were saying to him, open your heart to me. That's what the masters were saying. And I will enter. And he never left this path. And the next story, which is again a story that I've told, is about another person who stepped onto the path, who was in a class with us one night as we were talking about the Bhagavad Gita, about the autobiography, and who was trying to tell us that they didn't believe any of the stories in the autobiography, that their mind would not let them believe anything. Now, by the time they were part of this class, they were far down the path. They were committed. And as she was saying this, she was just crying, tears pouring down her face. And I said to her, "Do you know why you're crying in this class?" Because her heart knew something. She just couldn't speak but for touching her heart. Exactly what Swami Kriyananda said: "My heart recognized the truth long before my mind knew it." This is what happens. We hear these soul calls. Swami Kriyananda said to us once in a talk here, he said, "You know, our whole culture is not established in a way, it's not set up in a way to help us move forward on a spiritual path. It's not designed to help us have spiritual awareness, spiritual awakening." And then he said, "Particularly right here, particularly in Silicon Valley, where everything is so rational and so much about common sense," which is not bad, by the way, but it's bad for us spiritually. We get so drawn and involved in this has to work this way, and then logically that has to fit in here, and then it's all got to come together over here. It takes us away, exactly away, from the very teachings of Jesus, of Master, of our own soul, which is saying that which is right just does not always make sense. In fact, it often doesn't make sense. And if we're on a path where we want everything to make sense, we get sidetracked. I remember when I was living in Baltimore, I lived there for 5 years, and I had the perfect life. It's hard to describe it, but it was perfect. I had this booming medical practice. It was a pure success. In all absurdity, my picture was up on billboards all over Baltimore as the quintessential physician. I was in a great relationship. I lived in a beautiful home. And it started coming to me that I had to get out of there. It made no sense. I came back from I did a month seclusion. I came back, I announced to my partners, "I'm leaving in 6 months." And everybody got worried about me. This is the truth. People started coming to me and saying to me, "You think you should get some help? Maybe you should see a therapist." I said, "I am a therapist, and I'm living with a therapist. I don't need a therapist." And then the question, "What are you going to do?" I had no idea. I had no idea. Here's what I knew. This is many years ago. This is 1999. Something in me said, "Go somewhere and get quiet enough that you can hear the answer. Do not figure it out." I knew I needed to get out of there. I said to many people, "This is not reasonable." But I said, "If I stay, I'm going to get a cancer and die." I just knew that. Whether I would have gotten a cancer or whether my soul was saying to me, "You need to leave. You need to get back to California." So my mind was saying it was a cancer. If you die spiritually, it's a cancer of sorts. And you know, I drove cross country. When I arrived in California, within a month, I was living in the Ananda community. Of course I needed to come back. Of course I needed to get out of there. My life was on the line, but my mind had no idea why. I couldn't answer anybody's question. It was so illogical. Or it was reasonable. Nothing made any sense, except my heart knew it to be true. And of course it was the truth. Look at this life that I've been given. I needed to be back here. You know, I recently finished reading the book. I know Ash has mentioned this, but Narayani, who lived with Swami Kriyananda for the last several years of his life, came into his life in a very unusual way, which I won't speak about now. But after Swami Kriyananda died in 2013, Narayani went away for a year, really, and wrote this book called My Heart Remembers Swami Kriyananda. And I didn't read the book when it arrived. I mean, many people were saying to me, you've got to read it, you've got to read it. But somehow I didn't want to read that book right away. I didn't know why. I knew I would love the book when I read it, by the way. It wasn't that. But recently I did a little seclusion up at the Ananda meditation retreat. And while I was there, it was very cold and it was snowing. It was exquisitely beautiful and exquisitely, completely quiet. And I took a day and I read the book. And it's moving beyond words. Let me just say that. That book is written from such an extraordinary place of knowing. It's a book about discipleship and about attunement. It's a book about putting oneself in a position to receive divine guidance and pure intuition and to open to intuitive perception of our highest reality. And I want to share just a few of the short stories of the book with you, because we could just read the book together and it would be perfect, but we're not going to do that on a Sunday morning. So she knew really nothing about Swami Kriyananda, nothing. The very first exposure that she had to him was when her father, who knew about Ananda, encouraged her to come. She was 24. She was gorgeous. She was a hairstylist. She loved to go out to clubs and dance. She was like, you know, sort of generic, bright, wonderful 24-year-old living that kind of a life and having a good time. And she walked into a concert of Swami's music before she ever laid eyes on him. And she writes of this so beautifully. She says, as soon as I heard the music, she said, my mind was instantly calm. If these are not her exact words, they're close. She said, I was fully present in the moment. Do you know how hard that is? To get fully present in any moment. My consciousness was lifted to a state of pure divine love. That's what she said about hearing his music. It reminded me of when Master said to Swamiji, did you like the autobiography? Swamiji said, of course, I loved it. That's because my vibration is in it. That vibration, open your heart to me and I will enter. Through this vibration is exactly what Swamiji allowed to happen for Narayani. It was such a perfect moment through that music because she put herself in a place to receive the ability to develop, to open to her intuitive faculty. She then says that she went home and she just started listening to his talks. She spoke nothing but Spanish. Swamiji doesn't speak Spanish. His talks are not. He does actually speak it. But there were not many talks in Spanish. She was listening in English. She was listening in Italian. She was listening in other languages. Very seldom in Spanish. She said, the language, not knowing the language, was not only not a barrier, she said it was a gift because it was the sound and vibration behind the words and the music as I listened to his songs that touched me, that moved me, that changed me. All of this by way of saying nothing logical or rational was going on. Now, I wanted you to know that she was somebody who went out and loved to dance. Clearly, Narayani was a highly evolved soul. She was a very bright woman. It's not to say that, but that's not what had her go like this with Swamiji, so that the first time she laid eyes on him, the first words that came to her mind were, my king, my king. You know, I'm looking out into the audience and I'm seeing a woman who I know doesn't speak a lot of English. After coming to many classes that I gave and many sermons here, she came up to me one day, and it took her a long time to say this. She said to me, I don't speak very much English, but I understand everything you're saying. This is what happens. When I used to travel through India with a man whose name was Sant Keshava Das, I spent hours and hours and hours. Those satsangs were often 6 to 8 hours in all the states of India, in all different languages. I just listened. Most of the time, I knew what he was saying. He gave me that ability. He would say, I would say to him afterwards, how could I know what you were saying? These languages, he looked at me. He said to me, Shantima, I don't know this language. I said to him, Guruji, you just spoke it for 8 hours. He said to me, I couldn't say a word right now. You see these miracles that go on when we're open? The universe is ours. We cannot fight the battle of delusion with our minds. It's not just impossible. It takes us on a journey that is so far away. It instills our mind with doubt continuously. And the doubt plays its own game with us. Then we have to deal with the doubt. Then we have to just sink further and further into this place of really not knowing. We cannot fight the battle of delusion with the mind. Shankya said centuries ago, the God cannot be known. He cannot be known. Every great teacher has said it. And they've all said, open your heart to me, and I will enter. That's what we need to do. And we always say, and it will always remain the truth, we could say, meditate. Meditation is the answer, because not only does it take us here, but it calms the heart, which is the instrument through which we are trying to know God. When Lahari prayed this morning, there were so many, led our meditation, there were so many beautiful things about it. I had to say to myself, you do not have time to talk about it. But the one thing I will say is she said, open your heart to raise your consciousness into the divine consciousness and open your heart to divine mother's love. So yes, we need to calm the heart because intuition whispers and it can't speak to us if we're frenetic. But if we get quiet, if we calm the heart, we hear those whispers and we know things that we will never, ever be able to know with our mind. We will reap the fruit of this practice. I wanted to close just reading part of a poem that Yogananda wrote. Called When I Am Only a Dream, because what he says to us, what many of us have heard, is when I am gone, read my whispers from eternity. He actually had a lot of his prayers. He just wrote his prayers all the time, and he wrote poetry, many of which have turned into chants for us. We don't realize that we're saying so many of his words when we're chanting. But he said to his disciples, when I am gone, read my whispers from eternity. I will speak to you forever through them. Just because this word whispers, and really trying to know the divine in that way, has been so much a part of my consciousness since Master's Mahasamadhi. I reminded myself, he said that. I said, what am I thinking? Why am I not reading whispers every day? So, for this time now, I've been reading whispers. But just let me read to you. I hope that's Divine Mother calling. We've had two calls from her today. He says, when you are able no longer to talk to me, read my whispers of eternity. Eternally through it, I will talk to you. Unknown, I will walk by your side and guard you with invisible arms. And as soon as you know my beloved and hear his voice in silence, you will know me again more tangibly than you knew me on this earthly plane. And yet, when I am only a dream to you, I will come to remind you that you too are not but a dream of my heavenly beloved. And when you know you are a dream, as I know now, we will ever be awake in him.